Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
We are getting dangerously close to the start of the 2026 season for the UNC Bears. Welcome into Football 52. UNC head coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. Coach, my friend, good to see you on this 12th day of August. We are, well in, less than a month away.
Good to see you. I am, it's all football camp and all football guys. It's like socially, I'm out of it. Don't know what's going on. And, so this is like a little bit, even though it's still work and we talk football, it's a little bit of a break. Last night from, Steve Smiley and Cody Ball. We have a 3-man team. You can only play two for golf league, right? And so, but the three of us kind of rotate with whatever we've got going on, whether we can make it or not. But I'm out once training camp starts. They won last night. They won the men's league.
They
stepped it up first place.
Yep. So you're just out. You just have to say, when do you cut that off? Is it last week or is this the week that you cut that off?
When we started training camp, like the day we start training camp, I'm done golfing. I mean, I suppose there could be something important enough. I mean, if somebody really wanted to change our world or something write a check and the criteria for them writing a check was a round of golf with me. It's never happened, but I'm trying to imagine some scenario.
Yeah.
Like it's not a religious thing for me not to golf during the season, but, there's just my point is like I am out of it. So just to sit here for a few minutes and have some small talk before we get started, it's different because right now all my small talk, all my socialization, all my thoughts outside of a small amount of time with my family, when I kind of reintroduce myself to them every night, is just with all players and coaches.
Yeah, well, and you know, like we said, it's August 12th. I mean, it's amazing. As a football fan, once July is done, once we turn over into that month of August, it's just a flash. It's like, oh, okay, we still got 4 weeks, and then bam, it's here. We're going to have that game, that first game, under the lights at Nottingham Field. There's a lot of excitement building up. We're pumped about it here at the station. We're going to get a chance, Coach. You're going to allow us to pop out there next Wednesday, I believe, to take in some practice. We'll be doing the whole show live from out there. Yeah. So I'm told I need a tent, so there will be extra work for me, apparently. But we got interns for that kind of thing. They might just hold an umbrella for me. But I'm excited to get out there and just watch practice. You have always been so gracious. The University of Northern Colorado has always been so gracious of their time and allowing us access to watch practice, take it all in, these podcasts included. So I'm excited to be out there. Hopefully it's one of these like cloudy, you know, kind of cool days, but you know, we'll see. I know it's not all about me.
No, in fact, I appreciate the attitude, like your gratitude for being out there is cool. Benchmarks for the program would be that there would be a time where that gratitude from you would be warranted. Like right now, any media that would come out and pay attention to our program, we're the ones who ought to be grateful. But, if we can be successful, to a point where we kind of just grandfather you in and tell everybody else, no, we can't be filling up our practice here with media.
Yeah.
Then, that would be big time.
Can't even want a special passes that says like grandfathered in kind of deal. Yeah.
He was there during the lean times.
Yeah. Well, and again, you've just made it so easy. These podcasts too are a dream for me because I love this. But coach, I'll tell you, I love to watch football practice. I love watching football. I don't always know exactly what I'm seeing when you guys are going through certain drills and what you're looking for. We've talked about how important the tape is and everything. I will tell you from the most basic of viewpoints of a football fan, when I go out to practice, the only thing I'm really looking for, and this is my new thing now, is hot, nasty speed. I just go, who is a guy that's absolutely torching out there? Because I know you have strength is your big thing on these defensive and offensive lines. But I'm also, cause that's what's easy for me from being able to do a radio show and just watch practice, seeing a wide receiver cook a DB or a DB just close the gap. That's what I'm really looking for. So I'm going to be doing the hot, nasty speed alert when we're out there next week, Coach.
That's great.
It could be you when you just take off and run. You could be a part of that. We'll see.
It will definitely not be. But we do have other people besides those with hot, nasty speed that redline. That's one of the phrases we use is those players that will redline. So in other words, running at your top speed.
Yeah.
Whenever a player's doing that. But that might be harder to see when you're trying to watch 22 guys out on a field and you're just looking for the fastest.
Part of the joke of that is it's the most obvious thing for anybody to see. Is, oh, that guy fast.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I say when I go to football practice, cause you get all these questions like, what's the vibe out like there? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, coach seems, you know, intense. He seems ready to go. The guys are cheering. The guys are clapping. It's football season. We haven't played a game yet. So typically there's a lot of excitement in the air when you go out and view practice in August.
That's right. I would say, one of the things that has changed. There is a lot more confidence. The depth chart is more structured because we have more veterans. We're not brand new as a coaching staff, so I think guys are they're well communicated with. They know where they stand. They know that they can improve their standing on the depth chart. But there's a confidence in their teammates and the process and in the coaches, and that's what I feel more than anything right now. And that shows up to me in, you know, we don't have distracting levels of fighting and scrapping going on. And I know some coaches believe in that and promote that. I've played, coached, multiple, many, many championship teams now. Have never felt like the key to the season on a championship run was how often our players got in fights. That to me seems like foolish, anti-ethical, and really against what we're trying to teach these guys through football for their life.
I'm actually of that same mindset. When I see the fights break out, especially when there's multiple fights break out, and then there's certain coaches that are kind of like almost having fun with it.
Right.
You know, not that they're encouraging it, but they're kind of laughing it off. I've always thought that was odd. But this, you know, given this time, you guys have been around each other a lot. Guys are beating up on each other. I know they're ready to see a different color uniform out there. Is that a thing this season hard to prevent? Has it been a thing in the past couple of seasons hard to prevent as far as guys just getting into it with each other when we're in mid-August, a couple weeks before a football game?
Oh, sure. No, the guys are like squaring off. There is frustration. There are skirmishes. There are words. But I think partly in coaching, you get what you emphasize, right? I think at least over a longer period of time. And I've emphasized composure and confidence and poise and that being a key to, being a championship level, football program. And like I said, I think maybe other people could do it differently, build their team differently. But I think as a coach, you got to do it authentically. And, the way I, tried to play sports, the way that, my, most pivotal coaches coached me and the success that I had under them, that's the way I see championship caliber programs. You know, I cannot imagine John Wooden out there, you know, encouraging his guys to scrap and fight and throw fists and then somehow expect that to, you know, change within the game. And now you're mad, but you walk away and let the other guy get the flag. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, it's a penalty in the game and we're encouraging it in practice. So that's always seemed kind of odd to me too. Now, I promised myself today I was not going to ask you anything about a depth chart because I know we've got – this week, I want to talk to you about the camping trip coming up. That's been kind of a cool thing to follow with you guys. That's this weekend. And then it seems like it really starts to shift into that game week mode and positions are kind of set. I do have a question about depth chart process, though. So you see in the movies all the time, guys are, I think Moneyball, we've talked about it, different sports, whatever. Guys sitting down, they got a whiteboard up here. And they got everybody's name, like on a magnet. And then they just throw them up there.
Right.
And that's the depth chart. And it's like, well, we like Billy here. And then another coach comes in and says, oh, Billy's not so good. It's Damien. He's the guy. And then you kind of just move that around. Is that how the process works at all? Or is it like, we already kind of know the depth chart. We've talked to each other about it. Basically, what I want to know is, where is it? Where is it written down? Is it in your brain? Do you have a giant whiteboard? Is it a visual thing with magnets and names on it?
It used to be.
And it's always so cool.
And with, when I first started in coaching, every office that I worked in, we had a giant whiteboard depth chart with the magnets. And then not only that, but there was at least a curtain, but oftentimes at a well-funded program, you would have a whiteboard that had some type of cabinet constructed around it, and then you would close that so that when players walked in, they didn't always see the depth chart because maybe at that point you hadn't communicated that. I mean, it's not a hidden thing, but oftentimes the timing of when to reveal moves on the depth chart. You don't want a player to be surprised by that. You would mm-hmm. like them to hear that from you prior to practice, during practice, with a phone call, whatever it is. So we always kind of kept that hidden from accidental view. Well, now there are projectors in every office. There are screens. We all have our computers linked to those projectors, and we keep the depth chart on a piece of software. And so that's updated multiple times per day. You know, we're right now, just to give you an idea of how the day works, we have some meetings in the morning. There's breakfast. There's a little bit of a calisthenic and the treatment, the taping. We get out to practice. We start at 9 o'clock with some walkthrough. We're really rolling by 9:30. We have 2 hours of hard work, 2.5 hours overall total with the walkthroughs. 2 hours of hard work though ends at 11:30. And from 11:30 until the players come back for meetings at 4, the coaches are grinding on the old depth chart, but based on the film that they're seeing, right? And there's discussions going on. And that's what's really big about camp the camp out this week is that always marks the end of the period where we're doing training camp for training camp's sake. And when we come back from this camp out over the weekend, we will be transitioning heavy into game plan practice for game one for Weber State. And so we will no longer just be dispersing repetitions for the purpose of the depth chart movement. We will be doing it with an eye toward game one first, and then player development second.
Well, and that's what I always think is interesting too. When like a guy like me goes out to practice, and you'll see a certain quarterback is getting more reps, or a certain running back at this time, a certain whatever is getting more reps. That doesn't always mean he's the guy. In fact, it could mean the opposite. And you correct me if I'm wrong, but it could mean I want to see more out of that guy. So for me to go out to practice this week, it would be, hey, you might see a quarterback getting all the reps. You might see a running back getting all the reps. That doesn't necessarily mean they are number one. It just means we need to see more out of them before we can make that decision. Here in about a week and a half or whatever, that's when we start to set it. So, okay, the guy getting the first team reps, that's the guy going forward.
Right. Absolutely. That would be true. I mean, I'm smiling a little bit because some of the media that we do have, the Bear Down podcast guys will come, in addition to you. We have a very small circle of media, but those guys, I think they saw some practices where Caden Box, I felt like, had a lot of huge upside, and he's not with us anymore. So I've got to be respectful in the way I talk to him. I have nothing planned to say disrespectful, but it's just weird to talk about a player that transferred
sure.
out. Anyway, my point is, on nearly every scrimmage while he was with our program, I would really push the offense. I got to see this guy. He's got the most arm talent. I got to see him in there in the game. Like, I get maybe he's not making the decisions you want or something like that, and he's where he's at on the depth chart, but let me see him game in a scrimmage type environment. And so, and I think the Bear Down podcast guys would ask me a lot of questions about Caden Box, and I felt like it was because of what they were seeing, right? Mm-hmm. Because he's getting all these reps, and because of his arm talent, he made a lot of plays too. And so, after this camp out next week, you won't be seeing guys get reps, a significant portion of reps that aren't in the game plan.
Well, let's talk about that. So give me the schedule as far as what the camp weekend kind of looks like for you. And then when you turn that page to full on, like, okay, now we're set. With our all, not that you haven't been focused on Weber State, but now the tone of practice and the way you guys are doing things kind of changes. So can you walk us through kind of the upcoming schedule?
Sure. Well, this week, as I said, it's kind of some of the last opportunities for guys. So we've got a lot of good hard work. We're in shells, some full pad stuff as well. Some tackling, which is always a big separator defensively and for the ball carriers on offense, who can tackle and who can break tackles, and really can't simulate that in the shells type environment where you're playing touch football. You can get a lot done playing touch football, but not the tackling part. And that's a key separator for many positions. That camp out, I've got guys on my staff that participated in that camp out when they were players, you know, back in the Southern Utah days. And it is transformative. We have players on our team who have never been camping. We have players on our team who've never harvested an animal and cooked it. And, and kind of survived, lived by that. Never stayed in a tent, you know, never been fishing. And so, and then there's other guys that have done all that and can skin a deer. And, so it's great to see guys bond over that shared experience and the memories that they make. We're out of cell phone range, so guys won't have that opportunity. And then, but it's also a marker. And for those that have been in the program for a couple of years, they can feel that marker where, okay, we've put in a lot of work here this whole off season. And that's the time when I really feel like it changes to we are now in season.
Yeah.
There's not a huge difference to me between the work we're putting in January. It's kind of like the season seems a long way away. And the same is true. It's exciting to start spring ball and it's exciting to start training camp. But within a few days, the season still seems a long way away. But next Monday, the season is not going to seem a long way away.
How is, and now the camp, I think is so cool what you guys do. Because again, shutting off the cell phone, getting out of service is one thing. That's a big right. thing, obviously, in 2026.
Yeah.
But the live animal, all that stuff. I remember you brought in several players throughout a month or so of shows, maybe 2 months of shows. And most guys are like, yeah, it's a crazy experience. It's really cool. It's bonding. And then some guys initially were like, I've never done anything like this.
Right.
And then they kind of come away with, that was a pretty significant kind of experience to have. Right. And maybe one of those, I know that's the end goal, obviously, is a bonding experience with everyone.
It is. And still, in some ways, an evaluative experience or opportunity for coaches. Like, we send out a checklist of all the things that they should pack. And it's not much. Like, we're taking care of all the food. We've got the tents already set up there. We've got firewood. We're going to get a little rain, and so that the players will be allowed to have fires. We were worried about that because what's camping without being able to sit around the fire pit? But it looks like we'll have rain, and we have some Duraflame logs, which are a little safer for wildfire risk and things like that. But it's every year there seems to be a couple of players who like ignore the checklist and like just show up. They just get on the bus, you know, no change of clothes, no toothbrush. Nothing. And then, you know, it's like those guys tend to kind of like, that's not their year in football either. You know, we have to have guys that like, hey, coach says X is important. And, here's a handout. Here's, you know, we don't do handouts anymore. We send it all to their phones, right? Like here's what you need to know, whether you're talking about, offensive or defensive play installation, whether you're talking about an itinerary, you know, you send that out and then which players follow that? And 98% of them do, but it is, definitely an opportunity for us to kind of see, hey, man, where are you at mentally?
Yeah.
Like, let's go.
It's kind of like a personality test, too, just to kind of see who's preparing, how they're preparing.
Yeah.
Even seeing those guys that maybe over-prepare, too. Are they overthinking it? There's a lot of that where you could probably evaluate.
That's right. And it takes a little bit of prep. And so we've been telling them for a week now, you know, like, if you need a sleeping bag, you need to go to the recreation center. Here's how you go to the recreation center. Here's how you get on the website. You know, and then they all know this. Whatever they need, we've got them. So if they just, if they just can't figure it out, just walk into one of our offices. Hey, coach, I need something. And, we don't need a lot for this, but they need to put in some thought.
Now, when the guys are going, are they, obviously they're, you give them the list of things they need. We figure it out. They get it. Are they just kind of, is it more of a relaxing type of trip for them, or are you asking them to kind of, to work, to do a few things?
No.
Talk to me about that.
There is zero work.
Okay.
We have the only thing they are required to participate in, every player is required to participate in the talent show. It is a skit show, a cabaret, a variety show, whatever you want to call it. But we have a trophy, a legacy trophy that gets a new position group on it. The position groups can do a skit or talent show, whatever they want to do. They can do it all together as a position group. They can do individuals, and then those individual scores would count toward the position group finish. But that's the one thing that they must do. We have optional fishing tournaments, optional cornhole tournaments. We have, you know, the process of harvesting this year we're bringing up two goats, and the process of harvesting that, we're going to put one under the ground in an underground oven. We do it in the Tongan style. And so it's called an umu. And then we will do the other goat in, above ground and turning it above a spit. And that's in the Tongan word, that's called tunu. And so, some of the guys will get that experience and be able to, I mean, that's something they'll remember for the rest of their lives. There are a lot of their football experiences that they're having right now in training camp and throughout their careers that they may not remember, small moments. A lot of these small moments on this camp trip, they'll remember forever and learn a few things.
How is the talent show received? I would imagine some guys are like, the idea of getting up in front of my guys and doing something, whether that's, because I know we've had some guys do skits where they're even impersonating coaching staff. We heard about that a little bit last year. Are guys nervous about it? Because you guys have, these are hard-nosed football players that don't get, you hate the word nervous, that don't get nervous when they play football, when they go out there. But I would say the talent show thing is a completely different thing. It might put some of these guys out of their element.
Yeah. And again, in our first year of doing it, we did have resistance. We had two guys that literally like stayed in their tent, didn't even come to it, right? And then like we know who's there and who's not there.
Yeah.
And so then it becomes a thing. You're trying to teach them a lesson and, okay, what's your deal? And you never know if you're getting a straight answer, whether it's nervousness or resistance or whatever. But like, yeah, this is part of training camp. We're not asking you to do something physical, but like, here's something that's important. You know, good teams bond in different ways. Some teams make their guys stand up and do a karaoke like every night at dinner. Like I've been part of that. You know, there's a rookie show. There's like maybe more modern varieties of accepted hazing, right? Is what people are doing. This is my way of doing it. And last year we had zero resistance. The guys had a lot of fun with it. The positions take care of each other. If there's some shy guys in the group that just want to be extras
in the background
exactly,
or something,
they'll take care of each other. You just got to be willing to get out of your comfort zone.
Yep.
And we are not, this is not track. This is not wrestling. There's no like you do you. You are in every moment in football, you're playing for the guys next to you. And one break in the chain link affects the whole team. And so this is just one exercise on how to practice that and judge buy-in.
So how long are you guys gone? It's like you go up and then you're there for a night and then come home the next day, or how does that talk to me about the timeline?
We used to do two nights and, you know, we had a lot of guys kind of, you know, losing some weight and, complaining, not sleeping well. And so now we do two long days and just one night. And that seems about the right amount of time. There's still a lot of memories made. These are long days during the summer. We have a lot of daylight hours and, you know, they do stay up later on at night and talking and sitting around the campfire. So, we will go, we'll have on Friday, we'll have a whole day condensed into a really early, quick morning walkthroughs and practice and weightlifting and meals. And then we just kind of throw them on the bus from there and let's go, fellas. And then we try to get up there pretty close to midday. We'll be there all afternoon and evening on Friday through the night, wake up Saturday. The guys get up early, right? Because it's sleeping in a tent is different than being at home.
Yeah.
And so they'll be up early and that's typically when all the water activity days are there. We've got some canoes, some kayaks up there. The fishing is something guys like doing. Some of the guys go hiking there. It's an amazing place. The Ben De La Tour Scout Camp up there has got, near the Livermore area, Red Feather Lakes. It's got a lot of little short hikes, lookouts, and just kind of a really cool place. And then on Saturday morning, we'll also do the harvesting of the animals and start to cook those up.
And then you'll be back and ready to, like you said, kind of shift gears into different practice mode. Not to say things haven't been intense already, but there is a different intensity that comes once you get this trip, wrapped up.
But there is, and the players already feel it. We've got some players, you know, kind of seeing the handwriting on the wall, and maybe their repetitions have already been shaved a little bit, and so they're wondering, should they move positions, or you know, what's the plan for this year? Can they redefine success? As the more mature ones are kind of going through that process. And then for me as a head coach, one of the things that I really feel like is can be pivotal to a team, the head coach needs to push for the players who are down on the depth chart but bigger, faster, and stronger than those above them. And that can be difficult sometimes for position coaches, because position coaches, you know, they're working with these guys every single day. They're teaching them things. And then those that are learning those things faster and executing alignments and assignments at a higher level, the position coaches are always going to feel more comfortable with those guys because those guys are not going to make them look bad, not going to blow the defense open or commit a procedural penalty on offense or something like that. But as the head coach, it's my job to push a little bit and ask those coaches, hey, now's the time. Take the challenge on yourself to develop the bigger, stronger, faster player. Like that's part of your job. And so I think in a lot of ways that's freeing for a position coach. It can be a little bit of a threat because ideally a position coach would love to just kind of set their own depth chart and not have it questioned and have the head coach say, I see it exactly how you do. But I think also when the head coach, or a coordinator for that matter can say, hey, let's take our lumps here. This guy's big and strong and fast and we've got to teach him. And the only way for him to get better is to take some more reps. And so I'm with you if he's making mistakes. I'm not going to point the finger at you, mm-hmm. position coach. And so we're trying to find that balance and the opportunities for that next week are much more diminished than they are this week because we're all going to feel the pressure of doing it as well as we possibly can on game day.
Coach, I obviously we talked a little bit about the quarterback position last week. I was going to just pick your brain about key position battles that you've been excited to see, you know, a battle kind of taking place out at practice. Any keys there that you've really been honing in on? But also on that note, I know on this podcast we've talked about it. Sometimes you might not want to announce your entire lineup before you play Weber State. We have always, throughout the season, we have a better idea. We already know the depth chart. We already know if a guy might be losing reps or going to lose his starting job. So kind of a two-part question there. Any key position battles that are worth mentioning that you're comfortable mentioning? Because I know it is what it is. There's gamesmanship in this, and you might be hesitant to want to say, yeah, this guy's starting here, this guy's starting here, until, you know, 5 seconds before you guys kick off against Weber State.
Right. No, you're spot on because, if there's an established starter that's known, and we can talk about that, but that's not really the intriguing position battle that you're poking at right now. And if it's a new starter, then, that is something that we would, typically want to continue to let develop also, and not kind of talk too much about it here in terms of it settling in or which direction it's going. And then, I think there is that piece, it was funny. We obviously going to track our first opponent for several months, right? It's kind of like that's the only thing you can do, no matter who the opponent is. And last year it was Shadron State. We tracked them for months. Every piece of news, social media that we could devour, we were trying to gain some information on. And Coach Eric Kerr, the new head coach at Weber State, I've known him for 20 plus years since he was
interesting background. Yeah, with you
all
guys.
The way at Jordan High School. Yeah. And a lot of respect for the way he's always run his programs. And he's always been a guy that will jump in there and lift with his guys, which we did together or simultaneously and would talk about that and bond over that and talk about the impact that would make on teams and built our teams in similar ways. Well, so anyway, know him really well and professionally. And then he brings his quarterback out of the transfer portal, a quarterback that likely had P4 and major money offers at different places. And so when he got when Coach Kerr got the Weber job, he brings his quarterback from Cal, transferred from Cal. This was a record-setting quarterback at Corner Canyon High School. And, but all the media was like, oh, it's a quarterback battle. And none of the coaches would say it's his job, and now that seems to kind of, their quarterback, Devin Brown, is getting, more of the media, attention. And so it's clear that he is the guy, at least today penciled in, right? Or whatever, but it wasn't at one point. And so I think all of us as coaches are trying to do that. You don't want to unnecessarily give something away.
Well, and there's obvious ones too. When you hear about a transfer especially, and it's like this guy was pretty good at his last school. He's transferring over.
Right.
You can get a pretty good sense, even though coaches will say, yeah, we like this guy, but this guy's pushing him really hard. You kind of have to have that guessing game. On the other side of that, just try to figure out who's actually going to be out there, especially when you have coaches that have two different, and you've had this before where you've had one guy it's more of a running style mobile quarterback.
Sure.
Maybe another pocket passer. Totally, two totally different defensive game plans.
Right. Exactly. And in the case of looking at Weber again, like this is a quarterback that signed with Ohio State out of high school.
Yeah.
Originally committed to USC. This is like some rarefied air in terms of what we're used to dealing with. And so, Yeah, what are the capabilities? What are the talents? And we still have to look at all of them, right? Like it wouldn't matter if we're playing game seven of the season and we know the exact depth chart. We're going to make sure and prepare for quarterback number two and three and have a game plan for each of those. Obviously, our amount of time commitment and preparation is going to be diminished every step you take down the depth chart. But our guys do a really nice job of studying the whole depth chart and having a plan for each potential change as the personnel changes.
So I'll kind of rephrase this question then.
I have not brought up a single name for the Bears.
In a good way, has there been a position that you've been like, wow, I'm really impressed with the competition at this particular position?
I'll say, just what I've been talking about, to aspire to be a line of scrimmage football team, to kind of walk into a team that is completely the opposite of a line of scrimmage football team, where all the numbers were loaded toward the skill positions and there wasn't a lot of size and strength and player development, which I believe at the FCS level for sure, it's almost impossible to build a line of scrimmage football team through the portal because those line of scrimmage guys are so valued. And so we've poured into high school recruits for multiple years now. We've poured into the development in the weight room. And to see that offense and defensive line now be at the targets that we've set for strength and size, and then the way that they support each other, and that now that's beginning to leak into the linebackers and running backs. So we've got at the running back position, I think we have 4 to 5 established winning running backs that if any of them got the right amount of carries or hit a hot streak at the right time, I believe they all could be all conference type caliber players. And that's just a major difference for us. We have a clear 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which we haven't had at running back in the past. And I've spent a lot of time explaining to you and others that, hey, we got some guys we believe in, but somebody's got to step up and take the thing. I feel like right now, those 4 or 5 guys, we would win with all of those guys. We can win with all of those guys if they get their number called that day. And that's a much different position to be in at the running back position than we have been.
How much of a luxury is that? You talk about in the trenches on the line of scrimmage, the offensive and defensive line pushing so hard, being, top, the leaders as far as position groups on this team. And then it starts to bleed out and you're seeing the linebackers really pick it up. And then that starts to go into the secondary. Having those guys just battle with each other, the O line and the D line, making each other better, the old, iron sharpens iron kind of thing. I mean, obviously that's got to be a major luxury, but you're talking about how you're seeing the ripple effect throughout the rest of the lineup.
It's much easier to build a winning football culture with a line of scrimmage football team. For the skill players that get all the accolades and are so focused on the targets and the play calls and what the things that are somewhat outside of their control, right? The coaches control a lot of that stuff. If a team's culture is built around those players and those players aren't really strong leaders and know how to motivate through their actions, the line of scrimmage guys, then you tend to have a bunch of really good skill players that nobody's all that motivated to block for,
right,
or to fill gaps for up front on the defensive line. But when you have a line of scrimmage built football team and the skill players, no matter how good they are they recognize the leadership, the strength, the power, the integrity that the line of scrimmage guys are playing with, it's just much easier for the offensive and defensive line to feel that, remain motivated. Every touchdown is owned by the offensive line, no matter how much press the receiver gets or the quarterback gets or the running back gets. That offensive line feels that, and they feel like they're creating it. And it's all just really like a frame of reference, a viewpoint. But I think we have that viewpoint, and I've said from day one we want to build a line of scrimmage football team.
How good can these guys be on the offensive line and the defensive line? Like and I know there's preseason rankings, there's all this stuff, but Coach, we've had this podcast a lot, and a lot of time we spent in this offseason was talking specifically about those two groups. Mm-hmm. And you don't glow a lot, Coach, yeah, but you do kind of have that glow when you're talking about these guys. Cause I know that for you, for a coach that preaches strength, that preaches the weight room, starts right there. Those are the dudes that are really the ones putting up those monster bench presses, typically. Just how good can both of these groups be?
I would say one of the highest aspirations for a line of scrimmage football team would be able to win consistently on the road, because your ability to run the ball, to stop the run, sometimes can be diminished somewhat on the road. And so you hear the phrases like defense travels, run game travels.
Yeah.
Not always in the same way as the passing game, you know. So I really feel like that would be the major breakthrough for a football program that's never had a winning record in the Big Sky. You know, you've got to win road games. You get half your games at home and half your games on the road, typically with the league allocation scheduling model, right? And so even if you completely protect at home or have a very good home record, you've still got to go and win some road games. And that's what I feel like that this team will be capable of doing, is go into any environment, any place, and stand toe-to-toe and expect to win offensively and defensively at the line of scrimmage. And that makes everybody else look good.
I can't wait to see both groups in action, because as much as we've talked about both guys, and you had, you know, a member from the D-line and O-line represent you guys at the Big Sky at conference media days too. So I know, again, that's just been such a point of emphasis. I want to tie this back to my hot, nasty speed thing, though. Offensive line. I know that's not necessarily a connection. We don't typically look at an O-lineman and say hot, nasty speed. But if we had to, who is flat out not the quickest? Because I know there's a different type of speed when it comes to blocking. But if we're just racing, 40-yard dash, because we know those guys can make it.
Yeah.
Who's the fastest offensive lineman on this team?
Yeah.
Who's got the closest thing to hot, nasty speed?
It's Jack Zeeball. Zabel.
Is it like fast for a lineman, or are you like... He's pretty fast.
He's 6'4", 335.
He
may be the biggest center in the world. There are not a lot of NFL centers that
are
6'4", 335.
Yeah.
And he's strong, he's fast, he's physical, and it's kind of remarkable because, you know, when we're training in the off season, some days the emphasis is change of direction, more what you would call agility or short speed. And he has that. You have to have that to play on the offensive line. They all have that relative to their size, but he has that. But he also, like, there's times when we do, you know, 110s, like these guys are moving for a long period of time, and he's got a remarkable lung and heart capacity. His cardiovascular fitness for a guy who's 335. Typically the 330 pound centers, you know, they look exactly like what comes into your mind when you hear 330. I mean, I think a pear-shaped guy that's holding weight in the wrong places.
Yeah.
Zeeball doesn't hold weight in the wrong places. He's worked just incredibly hard.
That's got to be a terrifying thing, too, to see a guy that size, that tall, and that weight. As you said, this isn't like bad weight. This is strong weight. But seeing him, and you're saying he's, you know, you were pretty quick to answer that too. Like he's the fastest O lineman. Seeing that guy run like that, I mean, that's a terrifying prospect for, you know, a would be tackler.
Well, I think so. In his case, he doesn't look that way. You know what I mean? Like we had a scout for the Broncos at practice yesterday, and we're talking about Zeeball, and he's like, man, I can't really tell how tall he is from here, how big he is. And, you know, he's 6'4", 335. Really? And so when I heard that, I was like, let's walk over. So we walk over closer, and then you can see that Jack and I are the same height. But when Jack's over there with 6'6" and 6'7" guys, because our whole offensive line, we've got some big
dudes.
Tall dudes over there, right? And then he could see, oh, wait, he's as tall as Ed here, you know, when I went and stood next to Jack. And then, you know, much wider, three times wider than I am. But he's also proportioned, and that's where – you know, that's where I don't think, like, we're not going to rely on intimidation. Like this is not a guy that's just pumped up his arms. You know, he's not just an upper body guy with this skinny lower body. You know, I don't know how intimidating anyone on our team is.
I was pretty intimidated when they walked into the podcast studio. I'll tell you that when they had a hard time fitting in the chairs, that's a difficult thing for a little guy. Well, I'm not little, but for me to see.
We're not going to expect, like, you know, Weber State, like those guys on that team have been a part of multiple playoff games, championships. I mean, their run over the last 10 years is like the class of the Big Sky. they're not going to be, fearful because, Ed Lamb saying that Jack Z-Ball is got hot, nasty speed, you know.
I mean, that's going to be the tweet today. Hot, nasty speed yeah. alert. But that's the thing, like, this group, you've gotten me. I've always been a guy that appreciates the offensive line. I'm never one of those guys that's like, oh, I just want to talk about. But it's harder to talk about the offensive line because we don't always have stats available to us, too, you know? So that's, I think, one of the reasons people don't talk about the line as much as they talk about a receiver when we have our Hall of Fame discussions. But I will say this, you've gotten me the most excited I've ever been yeah. about an offensive line unit. yeah. And it's up here. Yeah. Like, I'm pumped. That's what I will be focusing on. D-line, too. But D-line gets props because they can get tackles, they can get sacks, they can register those stats. Yeah. The O-line is like a chain, man. I mean, they all got to be doing their job, and they don't have it. It doesn't show up in our box score. For you guys, you get to look at your own stats, how you view them and how you assess them. But for most people, they don't look at, when we're debating a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, we're not necessarily talking. We're talking about protecting their quarterback and just how good of a blocker they were. It's hard for us to really get into that. So this is the most pumped I've been about this unit.
Yeah, football's a crime like that. You talk about, you go to any school, any random booster club meeting, and whether you're talking high school, NFL, who's the greatest player to ever play here? And it's like the conversation is surrounded by quarterbacks and running backs and wide receivers in there. And, you know, very rarely would it be a defensive player. More rarely would it be an offensive lineman or defensive lineman. And like, what are the odds that all the best players in football played quarterback, running back?
Right. You know, and it's like when I hear Tom Brady's the best football player to ever do it, it's like,
right.
He's definitely the best. I mean, you could make a case, but yeah probably the best quarterback, yeah. but he doesn't have hot, nasty speed.
Right.
You know, he's not like a big, intimidating right. dude either. So it's hard when I look at him and say, yeah, we're saying Tom Brady is the best athlete
right.
to ever do it. So it is kind of crazy when it's going to be a quarterback, odds are. But these offensive linemen, the battles they go through, and we don't even – like, we see the big hits. We see monster hits. What these dudes do on just a run-of-the-mill play, yeah. just a run up the middle, these guys are – I mean, they're open to concussions a lot more than I think these guys are getting hit in the wide open.
Could be, yeah. I mean, the concussions really, the equipment and the
sure.
awareness is just taking
just
it out of the game.
Just battering rams going
yeah,
at each
other. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I have a knee-jerk reaction when somebody talks about concussions because there was a time there when change was needed, much needed change, but we don't really deal with that as coaches anymore because they do such a good job. But yeah, it's the punishment there on the offensive and defensive line without any credit. Right? Like
yeah.
you got this running back running up the sidelines and, all the eyes are on the running back and all the cheering is for him. And the offensive line is back there at the bottom of some pile trying to peek and see, you know, what kind of result on the play there was.
Or when we do get props to the O-line, it's usually, a pulling lineman or something where they get downfield.
The
it's like,
yeah.
oh, where did he had him in his sights. And those, yeah. and that, don't get me wrong. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's awesome. But the work it takes to create that room initially, that space, is not something typically that they're going back onto the replay and saying, hey, watch how they've wedged this out here. So this running back, sometimes they do, but a lot of times it's more appealing to see a big dude, 5-10 yards down the field knocking guys out.
Yeah. Or it's, for defensive line, it's sacks and tackles for loss. And
it's not consuming blocks and that kind of thing. Yeah.
A good defensive lineman will play 500 snaps in a season and five sacks is a good year. 10 sacks is an all conference and honors type, year. And, out of 500 plays, there's a lot of dirty work going on to be available on those plays. And so often the sacks and the TFLs are typically opponent mistakes. And that's what sometimes as a fan, it's really hard. And I'm a fan too. Like I'm not looking down on fans. I'm a fan when I watch the NFL or my friends' teams in college football or schools that I've been a part of. I'm a fan of all those teams. And, I still celebrate the tackles for loss and sacks more than the regular plays, but they're typically a mistake by the offense.
Coach, this is a weird one. Most selfless position in football. Is it like we said, block consuming kind of D tackle, or is it an offensive lineman?
It's guard. Offensive
guard. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The center, The center makes a lot of calls that gets recognized somewhat. They're actually snapping the ball. Yeah. You can see him pointing and so there's some of that. The tackles are, it's just well understood, you know, the blind side and stuff like that. The tackles are a valued position. The guards are in there, fighting in a phone booth. It's difficult. It takes strength. It takes courage. It takes tenacity, toughness that, they're really like the work trucks of the fleet.
Yeah.
Those guards and the success or lack of success goes directly right through those guards.
I love that. Getting me excited for the trenches, Coach. Well, I wish you guys luck this weekend for the big camping trip, and we'll be out there setting up shop on Wednesday. So hopefully it's going to be a great practice. Again, it's going to be an intense practice. It's going to, like you said, you're changing it up. You're not changing it up, but there's just something about that intensity that really starts to get going once we get done with this camping trip. And, you're a couple days out at that point, a couple weeks out from that first game of the season.
Yeah. When you're out there next Wednesday, we'll be 1 week of really the physical work will be 1 week from that point forward, yeah, because the game's on Friday. We'll begin to really taper on that a week from Wednesday. So you'll be out there next week. The following Wednesday, we'll be tapering our practice significantly to try to start to build up some reserves for the game.
No, I won't be taking any videos or any weird things like that, so don't worry, Coach. And we won't be describing literally everything we're seeing, but we will be just talking about, the fellas out there and just getting excited for football. So, again, I really appreciate you allowing us to come out there and do this. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Likewise. Thank you.
All right, Coach. We'll catch up with you next week. Good luck this weekend.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.